You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
My name is Brian Adams. I am the Director of Student Ministries here at Dwell Community Church. Thank you for having me. I'm appreciative to come and talk with you about this topic. Like I said, I am a parent of three. These are my three boys, the three most beautiful boys you've ever seen. I mean, like, come on. Dude, I mean, look at them. All right, enough flexing. All credit to my wife. So I am Director of Student Ministries here at Dwell. I'm excited to talk with you guys about the concept of battling digital addiction. Now, I'm sure that those of you who know me personally raised an eyebrow when you saw my name come up with battling digital addiction, because if you know me, you know that these things, these concepts, not really go together. It's a little bit oxymoronic, kind of like a married bachelor or a well-rested mother or an obedient child, right? Like they just don't go together. That's how it is with me, with tech addiction, truly from when I was 4 years old and I got my first Game Boy for the 30 years since. I am just I'm on my screen a lot. Truthfully, this is an area of big struggle for me, an area that I think is really serious, an area where I'm trying to develop conviction, to develop the ability to grow. I hope to share with you this morning both struggle, but also ideas for how to like triumph as I've been trying to learn about this area of my own personal life over the last several months. All right. Digital addiction, this is a ubiquitous problem in society, okay? Our phones are everywhere. They are ever present, and they're very easy to just kind of get latched onto. And we talk a lot in these meetings, these parenting meetings, about helping raise like a tech-wise family, helping our kids not be too addicted to their technology. But what I wanted to spend time this morning talking about is us, the parent, and the effects of our technology use when it comes to raising our kids. For example, I was reading this one meta-analysis from the Journal of American Medical Association, JAMA. They did a meta-analysis, so they study 1,000 studies, and they say, what conclusions can we come to? And what they wrote in their study titled Parental Technology Use in a Child's Presence, they said parental technology use in their 0 to 5-year-old's presence was significantly associated with poorer cognition and pro-social behavior. Pro-social being contra anti-social. Pro-social behaviors, things like sacrifice and sharing and things like that. Less of that, lower attachment, higher levels of internalizing problems, higher levels of externalizing problems, and higher levels of screen time. Now, the study itself admits that it's very early to tell the true ramifications of using screens in the presence of our young ones. Because, I mean, smartphones are still such a novel and relatively new concept in the grand scale of history. We don't truly know, but I think we can tell at the very least that it's not very good for kids, for us parents to be, you know, distracted, for them to have to vie for our attention. They're fighting between us, between their phones and them for our attention. That's not very good, but it's really hard, right? Like I'm preaching to the choir. You guys know this. You know that it's not good for us to be distracted and have our kids vie for our attention, but there's so many attention-grabbing things out there, right? Like the Taylor Swift podcast and the reels and the whatever it is that you do, the Candy Crush or whatever, you know, whatever. You know, that's probably what your grandma does, but you know, you get my drift. That there are things out there that we just tend to latch on to, and we do, and we don't like it. It's not like it feels good. I don't want to be distracted. I don't want my kid to feel like they have to fight for my attention, but it happens, right? This is something that we experience. It's a never-ending cycle. Now, some of you may not be like me. You might not be like, oh, I don't use my smartphone when my kid's around. But there are still those little pockets of time where it becomes a really big thing. Maybe it's when you wake up, you know, I gotta check my reels for the first 5 minutes of my day, which turns into the first hour of my day. Maybe it's at night where 10 minutes turns into an hour or two or three. Maybe it's during the nap. We all might have had that experience. If I sit down on the couch to get that well-deserved rest and what feels like 5 minutes goes by and my kid is screaming awake because I just wasted an hour on my phone and suddenly I'm not rested, I'm more anxious than ever. So our phones can actually create that the screen, I'm just going to use phone as parlance for screen, period, because I'm just going to assume that that's what most of us use, can create serious issues in our parenting, not just for our kids, but also for us. And so what I want to do this morning is I want to talk about 4 myths about how to break screen addiction, how to get over it, and why we want to bust those myths and come at it from the perspective of biblical truth. That's what we're going to talk about this morning. So what we want to think about here is how do we make this balance? On the one hand, we don't just want to be guilty because that's not going to change you. But on the other hand, like, tech isn't bad, okay? I'm not advocating for you to become Amish after this and you don't have any technology in your life. Technology is good. It has a lot of good things that it provides. And so we need to think about how we utilize tech for the good it provides while keeping the first things first, namely our faith and our family. So myth number one, my problem isn't that bad. This is one of the first hurdles we need to clear, because if you don't think you have an issue, you are not going to seek a solution. And so some of you might have recoiled at the idea of being an addict, right? I'm not an addict, you say. Maybe certain people are digital addicts, the people who are on their phones for, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours a day. I'm not an addict. Okay, I like what this author, Adam Alter, his book, Irresistible, The Rise of Addictive Technology in the Business of Keeping Us Hooked. It's a good book. He writes, he says, our understanding of addiction is too narrow. We tend to think of addiction as something inherent in certain people, those we label as addicts. Heroin addicts in vacant row houses, chain smoking, nicotine addicts, pill popping, prescription drug addicts. The label implies that they're different from the rest of humanity. They may rise above their addictions one day, but for now they belong in their own category. In truth, addiction is produced largely by environment and circumstances. Steve Jobs knew this. He kept the iPad from his kids because for all the advantages that made them unlikely substance addicts, he knew they were susceptible to the iPad's charms. These entrepreneurs recognize that the tools they promote, engineered to be irresistible, will ensnare its users indiscriminately. There is not a bright line between addicts and the rest of us. We are all one product or experience away from developing our own addictions. And that's the thing about the smartphone, is that you have a wealth of addictions available to you in your pocket. Like what it used to be in our parents' generation is that if you wanted to go for some kind of addictive substance, you needed to go to a back alley or the dark corner of a store if you wanted to, you know, purchase an addictive substance or whatever that was for you. Now, you can just pull out your phone, right? And you have social media. Some people are addicted to that. They're addicted to the reels, addicted to the likes. You have people who are addicted to online shopping and they just scroll Amazon endlessly. You got people addicted to the games you know are completely useless, but that you play for hours anyway. We have people who are addicted to online pornography. We have people who are addicted to online gambling. You can get all of it right here just by opening this thing up with the tap of a finger. And you have a wealth of addictive substances available at your fingertips. We are all very close. And so I want to ask you to consider two statements before we move on. Number one is that if you're like, look, my spouse needs this, but not me, or my friend needs this, but not me, I would ask you to please take one moment before God right now to just ask him to reveal to you if there's something for you to gain from this morning. I like what David says in Psalm 139, where he says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any hurtful way in me and lead me in the everlasting way. Okay? To ask God right now to give you that. Second, I want to remind us all that the goal is not tech freedom, by which I mean that we don't use it, okay? Not Mennonites. We are talking tech mastery. 1 Corinthians 6:12 is a great verse. It says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are profitable. All things are lawful, but I will not be mastered by anything. I don't want the phone to be a thing in my life where when I sit down on the couch, I feel compelled to open it. Or that when I don't have my phone on me, I have a sense of anxiety that something is wrong because I don't have my device on me, that I'm suddenly disconnected, I'm missing out, something bad is going to happen. That is a sign that something is wrong. We want to reach a point where these devices are not actually empowering us. We are controlling them. I remember growing up that I would see the pictures of like the dad in the comic or on the TV show who would get home from work, sit down on the couch and like open his newspaper or turn on the TV and be completely disengaged from his kids. And I remember thinking, I never want to be that. I never want to be that person. But if I'm honest with myself, while I don't read the paper and I don't really watch TV that much outside of Sundays during football season, I don't watch it that much, I am that dad. Because I will sit there on my phone scrolling for no reason, for no purpose, for nothing good while my kids are sitting there playing. And so it's like I've become the thing that I don't want to be, right? And we want to be able to fight that and be able to give our kids the attention they deserve. So that's one. Let's move to number two. I can't imagine life without my phone. This is one of the most difficult things about having a phone, because the truth is that when you're addicted to something, you can't imagine living without it. Suddenly, it becomes a necessary part of life, as if we didn't live a majority of our lives without smartphones. Suddenly, it feels like if I don't have one, my life is going to crumble. And again, I'm not saying you need to get rid of it, but I'm saying that there's this sense that can develop that if I don't have it, everything's gonna go wrong. I'm gonna have so many things go awry in my life. That's actually not true. We have actually gotten by quite well. And again, I'm pro-tech. If I didn't have maps, I would be so screwed, okay? I would waste so much gas because I do not know my way around anywhere, even though I've lived in this city for 30 years. I can't get anywhere. I need the tech. I'm not saying it's all bad, but again, when we're controlled by it, it becomes a problem. Imagine what that's going to mean for our children, who literally will be able to say, I never grew up in an era without a smartphone. It's pretty scary. What happens with this myth is that we get deceived into believing that screen time is actually refreshing. That's the thing about addiction, is that it quickly turns from perceived pleasure into absolute slavery. Suddenly, it was this thing that I liked. Now it's this thing that I cannot live without. And that is when you really cross the threshold into an addictive property. I'm going to talk about this book a lot. This book, Smartphone Dumb Phone. Horrible title. Great book. It's a book about freeing yourself from digital addiction. It inspired a lot of this workshop this morning. In it, the authors write, they say, as with all addictions, it's the illusion that the behavior provides a genuine pleasure or comfort that keeps you trapped. Smokers suffer from the illusion that cigarettes help them relax. Actually, they do the complete opposite. The same misconceptions are at work when it comes to digital addiction. As we get sucked into all those different apps and engagements, you're being lured into believing that all those activities are essential for staying in control of your life and being happy. Yet the more you do them, the more you feel out of your depth. Nevertheless, the illusion of pleasure remains. So you think about, what's the answer? What's the answer to this dilemma? What can we do about this? What can we do about fighting this myth? What can we do about fighting the fact that we made this choice to engage with our phones thinking that it would relieve our emotional suffering, and actually it's just perpetuating it? It's just creating more of it. It's actually accentuating it. What do we do? The Bible's answer to how we see change in our life and how we overcome myths like this is thought-transformed thinking. It's thought transformation. It's not willpower. It's having transformed thought. Romans 12:2, it says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. That way you will prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. We know. This is not good. We are replete with studies about how screen time increases anxiety and depression and a whole host of other mood disturbances. And if you want more reading on that, read Gene Twenge's iGen, an excellent book on the subject. We know that it's bad for the kids too. It's creating this horrible epidemic among our youth. Just a host of horrible things that are happening right now, all because of the introduction of the screen, the smartphone, the ubiquitous screen time, social media, and everything like it. We need to have transformed thinking. Feeling bad about it is not gonna do anything. You think about some of the myths that we're facing and some of the truth that could set us free. For instance, thinking that my smartphone is gonna relieve my anxiety. My morning has been so stressful. My kids are going crazy. I just need to relax a little bit. Guess what? Your smartphone is not going to relieve your anxiety. Your smartphone is actually creating a lot of your anxiety. That is what all of the studies say. That is what all of the science says. Your smartphone is making you more anxious, not less. And I know that your kids are also causing a lot of the anxiety, but your smartphone is not making it better. That is the truth of the situation. Number two, I need a break. Yes, you do. You are so right, especially the mothers. You guys are very hardworking, among the hardest working people that we know. Absolutely. Here's the problem. When you sit on the couch and look at reels for an hour, you are not giving yourself a break. You are actually creating a situation where that hour has not only vanished, it has made you feel worse, not better. And now that nap goes, and all of a sudden you're behind the eight ball because you thought you were going to accomplish some things, but instead you just feel all the more anxious because of everything that you just took in, and now the situation just perpetuates, and you're frustrated with your kids and so on and so forth. You know the experience. You do need a break. Sitting on your phone is not a break. Getting coffee with a friend is a break. Taking a nap is a break. Getting time with God is a break. Do things that will actually refresh your soul, right? We need to be freed from the idea that sitting on my phone is me giving myself a break. Three, I won't be connected to people if I use my phone less. Wrong. You'll probably be more connected, because here's what happens is we go to places where people are supposed to connect, like restaurants and parks and things like that. And what are people doing? They're sitting on their phones in places where you're supposed to talk to other people. You're sitting there doing, and don't get me wrong, I do it. Like, I do the same thing. But it's what's happening is that it's creating this world, this fake world, where we're more interested in things that don't matter here, things that have no ultimate purpose or value, instead of connecting with other people in the presence, in the present. And so you are not going to be less connected. Sure, maybe you're going to miss a story here or there, but your friends are going to tell you about the things in their life. You're not going to miss out on that much. Okay, you're not going to miss out on the birthday party invite or whatever. You're going to figure out about it all the same, even if you get on it less. Fourth, I can't imagine life without my phone. The very myth we're talking about here, number two. Do you know what created that myth in your head? It was you getting a phone. Your phone has created your problem. Do you know why you don't feel like you should shoot heroin right now? It's because you've never had it, okay? It's not just because, like, you know, we might stigmatize heroin addicts. They're like the dirty people who live on the sides of the streets and whatever, things like that. If you took heroin, you would suddenly feel like, I need heroin. That is how addictive properties work. And so in like fashion, the only reason that you feel this need that you must have your phone is because you have one. And as long as we continue to feed this beast, that addictive property in your mind will continue to perpetuate. The only answer is really to feed it less and slowly starve it and kill it. And you will suddenly begin to see that actually life is much better when I don't use it so much. It's true that when we abandon addiction, it involves no true sacrifice or deprivation. That is a truth we need to learn to believe. Like a drug addict, let's say a cigarette smoker. There is nothing good about smoking cigarettes for you. And so therefore, it involves no true sacrifice or deprivation to get rid of it. Because all you're doing is ridding yourself of something that's harming you. It's all in your head. The idea that I'm sacrificing, I'm depriving myself, my life's going to be so much worse if I don't have this horrible addictive substance. And I was a cigarette smoker. I've been through this. It feels like the end of the world. But when you overcome it, you're like, oh, wow, actually, my life is better. I didn't actually sacrifice anything. I just gained a lot. While technology is good, the same principle applies. I'm not talking about digital use. I'm talking about digital addiction. When we abandon this, we are not truly depriving ourselves of anything, because addictive substances don't provide us anything genuinely good. I like what Jesus says in John 8. He says, when you know the truth will make you free. And so again, when we think about transforming our thinking, we need to learn what's true and learn to think that way, which leads us into our third myth. I can do it myself. If I just fix myself, then everything will be good. This is one of the most common myths when it comes to addiction. I just need to try a little harder. And once I try a little harder, I'm going to stop doing that negative habit that I have. Really? that true? I'm going to say something controversial, but I believe it. I think that focusing on willpower is probably the most counterproductive thing you can do. I think it's probably the most counterproductive thing you can do, and I'll tell you why. All of us have bad habits, whether it's this or something else. And we try really hard to overcome those bad habits. Maybe you're a parent who tends to get angry, you have an angry outburst sometimes at your kids. You're like, I hate that about myself. I'm gonna try really hard to not get angry with my kids anymore. And that's great. Only when your kid disobeys you for the 37th time in an hour, all of a sudden you're angry again. Your willpower doesn't suddenly feel so strong anymore, does it? Willpower is great. I'm not saying that it's bad, but it is not sufficient because it does not actually genuinely change us. It can't actually do anything to win the battle. If you want to see genuine change, you can't do it yourself. This is because of the biblical concept that self cannot change self. You can't fix yourself. It's not possible. I like the way Jeremiah puts it. Chapter 13, he says, can the Ethiopian change his skin or the leopard his spots? Then you also can do good who are accustomed to evil. I can't change the color of my skin. A leopard can't change the spots on his fur. In the same way, we have a natural disposition to do what the Bible calls sin, moral wrongdoing, disobeying God. And we can't change that. We are not capable in and of ourselves to make ourselves any different, any better, and you see that in personal experience. We know that we try really hard to be better people because we love our kids, we love our spouses, we want our families to be great. That's amazing, I believe that. The problem is that that is not enough. We're not, it's just like, it's impossible. It's like trying to fill a car with like French fry oil and trying to make it run, okay? It's not gonna work. Maybe they're doing that these days. That would be a bad example if so. I like the way that Romans 7 puts it. He says, for I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is in my flesh, for I have the desire to do what is right, but I don't have the ability to carry it out. Maybe you can relate to that, right? Like me, maybe you realize, like, I just can't. I want to be better, but it is not working. And you may hear that, and I don't know if you come to this church or not, I don't know if you're a part of this, but that may sound really discouraging to you to hear, like, well, what am I supposed to do? Am I just screwed? Am I just never going to get any better? What am I supposed to accomplish? How am I supposed to get better? Are my kids just doomed to a life where, we struggle here as a family? This can sound discouraging that you can't change yourself, but for the Christian, this is actually a message of great hope, not discouragement. And the reason why is because you don't have to be the one who's concerned with fixing yourself. You don't need to make yourself better. You can't, so you can abandon that hopeless pursuit and you can actually entrust this process to God. What the Bible teaches, if you're not familiar, is that God wants to be involved in your life. He wants a relationship with you. He wants to know you. He wants to be a part of your life. He wants to transform you. He wants to give you an incredible life. He says in John 10:10, I came to give my people life and give it to them abundantly. He wants you to have joy, satisfaction, transform character, so on and so forth. What we have to do to experience that, though, is to invite him into our lives. He says it like this in Revelation 3:20. He says, behold, I stand at the door and I knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and will dine with him, and he will dine with me. Jesus wants to come into your heart. He wants to be a part of your life, dining like two friends do together in your heart. Where he gets involved, you let him in and you begin to experience his joy, his patience, his satisfaction, his transformative power. Where all of a sudden, instead of you needing to worry about making yourself better, like Philippians 2 says, you can agree God is working in you, giving you both the desire and the power to do what pleases him. You cannot fix yourself, but God can fix you. If you will let him in, if you will allow him to be a part of this process, taking things to him in prayer, getting other people involved in Christian community, as you take these steps that he provides, you begin to experience transformation of character in your heart. Okay, fourth and finally, I just need to hit blank screen time. This is a common myth. It's easy to view victory as an arbitrary numeric mark that your phone tells you. If I hit under 2 hours of screen time, I'm good. If I get over 2 hours of screen time, I am bad. Really? It's interesting. Is that really the case? Let's consider, for example, that you spend 90 minutes a day on your phone. That's pretty low, pretty great. But that 90 minutes is while your kids are trying to get your attention and you're sitting there scrolling YouTube for an hour and a half while your kids are not being, you know, paid attention to. Suddenly, not so great. Meanwhile, your friend gets 3 hours of screen time a day and you're like, I'm better than her. She gets twice as much screen time as me. But she's spending an hour every day, you know, on the phone with a friend ministering to her because for some reason iPhones count that as screen time. And then she spends 30 minutes letting her, kid watch a show on her phone so that they can get a little bit of quiet time. And then she spends 90 minutes on maps driving, the family out to wherever. And all of a sudden she has double and it's like, well, she's way worse, right? Wrong. It is never about some kind of arbitrary mark or number. This is what the Bible calls legalism. Legalism is the idea that if I just follow certain rules, I'm good. God does not operate this way. God operates under a paradigm called grace. Instead of following rules, it's all about relationship. It's all about choosing to follow him and get behind what he wants, to choose to act based on his love and his forgiveness and not try to earn people's love or earn even your own self-acceptance by hitting certain metrics or following certain rules. This is one of the things that differs Christianity from every other religion out there, that it is all about relationship. It's all about connecting with God. And so I want to tell you what the goal is. Your goal should never be, I just need to hit X screen time per day. Because that might not be the case, right? You shouldn't feel anxious if you spend 2 hours on the phone trying to minister to your friend in crisis and it counts that as screen time. You shouldn't feel anxious that your screen time has suddenly popped up way higher. That's not a problem. You're doing a good thing. Our goal should be this. I use my phone when I legitimately need it, and I do not use it when I don't need it. That's the goal. That is mastery. I use it when I need it. I don't use it when I don't need it. It is as simple as that. We need to learn to accept that feeling of like, I don't need to sit on the couch and subconsciously pull my phone out of my pocket and start scrolling. I pull my phone out of my pocket when I have a purpose. What do I need it for? And if you need it for several hours a day for work that you do or using your maps or calling people on the phone, whatever, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. The point is, we want to get away from stopping with the mindless doom scrolling that is ruining our days, making us anxious, ruining our sleep, making us frustrated with our kids, and so on. We want to be masters of our device, not mastered by it. So, when you get under grace, when you focus on just following God based on his forgiveness, not based on rules, what you will see, it's counterintuitive to just accept the love of God, to accept I don't have stipulations I need to follow. What you'll find is that you'll be actually genuinely motivated for real, lasting, effective change. It's weird because in humanity and the way that we work, we tend to think that it is all about what I can accomplish. I need to pull myself up, make this happen, make myself better, follow the rules, meet the metrics so I can get the promotion or be the better parent or whatever. That's not how it works with God. We take in his love, we take in what he said about us, and as we mull on that, we dwell on that, we believe that, we actually begin to genuinely change. So, wrapping here, think about 3 points as we conclude this morning. Number one is, I think the most important concepts out of this, and when it comes to really one of the most important concepts in the Bible in general, is that we need to get under grace. Because if you try to change yourself by things like guilt, it's never going to work. You probably know that from experience. Trying to make yourself change is not going to work. Even goal setting, which is good and even biblical, is not enough in and of itself to change who you are in your heart. If you want to change in your heart, you need to experience the love of God personally. You need to invite God into your life. If you're someone here who doesn't come here, you've never started a relationship with God before, you never invited him in, please consider doing that. Talk to other people here, right? There are several people here who will tell you that our strategy in parenting, the way that we make ourselves strong, biblical, gracious, loving parents is not that we are really good people who had just the best upbringings in the world, had all the circumstances line up for us. It's that the love of God's in our lives. That is what separates a Christian from anyone else, is simply inviting God into your life, a choice that is available to every single person in the world. You can invite God and you can experience his love. It will transform you. And when you do it, we have to fight for that regular time with him, to read the Bible, to express gratitude, to pray. I know, alongside you all, that that is very difficult when you have little kids, okay? I got three that are five and under. I get it. We got to fight for it. I know that we're tired. I know that there's a battle, but we have to fight to develop the regular disposition. Even if that's in your 10 minutes before bed, that'd be a much better use of your time than scrolling your phone. Spending regular time with God is a must if we want to be the kind of parents that we want to be and we want to escape this battle that we're talking about this morning. Number two, oh, this is a great verse. I forgot about this. Romans 6:14, it says, "For sin shall not be master over you, for you are not under law, but under grace." The concept there is that if you put yourself under rules, sin will be master over you. So if you're all about rule following, it's not going to be good for you. You get under grace, all of a sudden those addictions, those vices, those problems are going to start to change for the better. Second is that you should equip yourself. I tried to give just a brief summary of this book that I referenced earlier, Smartphone, Dumb Phone. It's not a Christian book, but it is an excellent book. It's a book from these guys who are all about battling addictions. They have books on smoking, on even eating. Like, they have all kinds of different stuff on it, on different addictions. And it's very good, really, really good. I highly recommend it. It's a very easy read. They reinforce the concepts really well. And this book was very transformative for me to read. It was actually the same guys. I read their book and I quit smoking cigarettes as well. So props to them. If you're not really as familiar with the biblical perspective, I would recommend probably starting with a book like Walking in Victory by Dennis McCallum. He's one of the founders of this church. If you're not as familiar with the ideas of like grace and what it means to walk with God, like I think reading the Smartphone book is good, but it's best when informed by a biblical perspective. And so I would recommend Walking in Victory first if this is something that's newer for you. And third and finally, I just want to reinforce that setting practical boundaries is not bad, okay? It's just insufficient. So like, we'd all do well to set ourselves some boundaries. Like one thing they recommend in the book I just referenced is don't use your phone for an hour before bed because it will help you get better sleep, for example. We would do very well to set boundaries like that in our lives. I'm not saying it's bad or wrong or that you can't have any rules in your life or regulations or something like that. I'm just saying that if you stop there or if that's the predominant means for change in your life, you're going to be unsatisfied. It's not going to work. And so do set boundaries, but focus more on grace. That's why we talked about that first. So so that's all that we have this morning. Thank you, Lord, for getting to be here together and getting to study this concept of combating digital addiction all together. I pray, God, that you'll help each of us to get under grace, to experience your love, and to be transformed by it. And that as we experience the transformative power of your Holy Spirit in our lives, that our families will get to begin to see the fruits of it and see the benefit of just getting even more of us and getting a more joyful version of us as we abandon this addiction in favor of a much better way of living. Thank you that you're for us and that you're working on our behalf and that we don't have to do this ourselves. Pray for a great morning of hanging out here together. Amen.